Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
What's up? It's Baby Friday, Fan Morning Show. Cuthbert and Forzy.
What is that?
Is that the
summer introduction?
I'm getting ready for a
Cuthbert
big day
and
today.
Forzy.
A big day today, hitting the links. Yeah. And as soon as we get out there, everyone just gets in the Forzy mood. Like my real name doesn't exist.
I think it's just two people that call you that.
Yeah,
and those are the two people you've
been golfing
with lately.
That's a Baby Friday golf day for us. It's a Forzy day.
You don't like Forzy?
I like Forzy.
I'm shocked that Forzy was not your name playing hockey.
Yeah, I don't know.
Consistently.
Nobody had to say my name much.
I like Fours better.
Fours. I should have been number 44. How good would that have been?
Yeah, you really should have.
Hey, I got an opportunity this fall.
There you go.
Should I be number 44 this fall? Nah.
You're not changing your number.
Well, I'm newcomer to the team, so I probably already has 27.
Maybe. That's possible.
If I can't be 27, yeah. Should I be 44?
I think so.
I could be fours.
But you're not like synonymous with the number, like with, you know, Bobby Orr, number four. It's not four far 27. It's not quite
no,
there.
I'm not a Hall of Famer.
But you have established that that's your number. Me not even ever seeing you play hockey, I know that that's your number.
I think after this team has already been like, I guess, 2, 3 years, 4 years down the line, I don't know if 27 will be just sitting there waiting for me. I think somebody probably would have sniped that number, so I might be fours this fall.
So it won't be like my entire minor hockey career where there was 18 jerseys, 1 through 18.
But then I was just thinking about that. Do you think they have custom jerseys that you can just like, I want this
number? I don't know. I don't know how serious this is. You were banging the drum on the seriousness, though, early on.
It is going to be serious.
I mean, I pick my number with my men's league team.
Yeah, but you
guys, not like we just have pennies.
Yeah,
you probably get a jersey. You might have to pay for it.
Could be Forzy this fall. Stay tuned. Forzy's fall.
Double fours, 4-4.
Yeah. Well, that's what you call it. And you're like chirping someone. You're like ones.
1-2.
Yeah. Six
hey,
shift.
1-2.
Ones. 1-2. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that's it's Forzy day. It's a Baby Friday golf outing for us. We got a show that just highlights the range of the Fan Morning Show and producer Daniele today.
Big flex from Daniele.
You thought, NHL ended, NBA ended. How about we throw a little Toronto Argonauts at you? How about we throw a little F1 preview of the Canadian Grand Prix this weekend? How about a little PGA Tour action for you this morning? We've got Canadian legends just lined up this morning. And Toronto Blue Jays, of course.
Of course. You got to talk about the Toronto Blue Jays.
We got a chance to talk to Dave Markle, who is the PGA Tour caddy for Nick Taylor. Ever heard of him?
Mm-hmm.
Chatted with him yesterday. They're obviously out in LA, so a little West Coast hours meant that we had to chat after the show. He's awesome. He's kind of going through it with us too, right? How to walk us through the moment is, oh my God, like it was crazy. He's a bro. It was fun.
Yeah. He's not like, I don't think, the PR training for everyone is like happening right now, I think, but maybe not happening for the caddy. Not that like he was like over the top.
No, but he was just fun. Like,
but he was
fun.
Just like, it was just a normal conversation rather than like, you know, I'm trying to protect my brand,
yeah.
Which is what a lot of people are doing when they're on the radio or on different interviews. And he was just like, yeah, it was a very honest look at his perspective and interesting because he's kind of an everyman on the bag of a guy who had one of the greatest moments in Canadian history. So it was a kind of a cool contrast in that way.
Yeah, U.S. Open tees off today. Time will be a little less distracting for us. How about that? Because the first tee times are 9:45 this morning since we're on the West Coast. So I won't be looking at Justin and the TV above his head while we're live on the air.
We're big dummies, though, because we shoehorned in the picks yesterday during the A-list.
Yeah, I know.
When we could have done it today in the normal wake and rake slot. But oh well.
We just anxiously wanted to get it done. So we've got our buddy Nick Taylor's caddy, Dave Markle, later in the show. Lawrence Barreto is going to join us, F1.com. Canadian Grand Prix this weekend. I went last year. Mm-hmm. We weren't doing the show together then.
No.
And I had an enjoyable experience when you eliminate the travel / logistics of it. So if you're going this year.
Didn't you have like a big walk or something? Like you had to walk
home?
You want to rehash that?
It was rookie mistake. Like I hadn't been to the Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal and adequate research. So this is all an Ailish Forsey problem.
I mean, you were with a big group. Was it all on you? It's all on 27? It's all on 27?
It might have been on 27 a bit. But I came on the radio the Monday after the Grand Prix, and I was very honest about my experience. So if you're going this year, there's some tips, such as be prepared to walk up to 3 hours in and out of the track. Like, it's on an island, and it's like impossible to get to, and the traffic is brutal. And if you don't have grandstand seats and you're just general admission like I was as a peasant, good luck. Those are some tips and tricks for going this weekend. It's a hell of a time. It's awesome.
Those weren't tips. That was just like a caution. That was just a warning.
Well, I'm not going to just go back and listen.
You basically need to be rich.
You do need to be rich. So like that's kind of when I wasn't rich and I'm not. And so I didn't buy grandstand seats, and I was standing behind probably like 12 to 15 rows of people. I never saw one vehicle. I heard them. So if you wanted to hear them, nope, there goes one. Never saw like an actual vehicle rip around the track because I cheaped out because I didn't see it.
It's kind of like our RBC Canadian Open experience. I mean, at least they had a lot and shuttles.
Yeah.
So that was,
but
we could get out of
there. The transportation is, you just got to figure it out before. Don't mail it in like me and try to do it day of, okay? Mm.
Would it be better to go early and to kind of just experience like Friday, Saturday?
A bunch
are there
of my
Friday events
at
F1 race?
You can go Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, whatever you want. Like,
there's Thursday stuff?
I don't know.
Like the concessions
remember.
And whatnot.
Yeah, well,
like
you can go see, there's like,
that.
You know, practice trials, whatever.
Oh, there is? So that would be better.
They don't just show up Sunday and race.
I didn't know they were doing it as early as Thursday.
Well, okay.
But again, we're interviewing Lawrence Barreto later, and I'm going to basically be on the sidelines.
There's opportunity for you to see whatever you need to see earlier on in the week. And I would recommend that if you go get the weekend pass, you go Friday, you go Saturday, you get a way better opportunity to get up close and personal, see the cars from, you know, the fence at least. As I said, I didn't do it right. So now, I almost wanted to go back this year and do it right, but it's Father's Day this weekend and there's other things going on.
Does it affect the whole city? Like, is the entire city shut down or just that area?
That's part two of it. Montreal is so slammed. Like, I was lucky to stay with people that I knew, so I didn't have to worry about the hotel situation. But the downtown, it's awesome, though. They make it like an experience. You could tell that there's a Grand Prix happening in the city, even though it's not, like, the race isn't in the downtown core. So that's a little bit different, right? If you go to it in Monaco, you're in it, right? Like, you're in the race. But this one, you kind of have to go to the race.
Right.
But nonetheless, it is this weekend. If you're going, let me know. 590.
You have to go to the island that houses the race.
You gotta adventure, and it's an exciting experience if you do it right. So good luck if you're going. We'll talk to Lawrence Barreto at 7:30. Ben Shulman joins us at 8 after Barrios' absolute gem last night. And then Enoch Mwamba, who was the most outstanding player at the Grey Cup, the Toronto Argonauts, defending Grey Cup champs, joins us at 8:30. They kick off their season this Sunday. Part of me is like, well, would my father be all right if I just mailed in Father's Day and went to the game?
Oh, really?
I kind of want to go.
Well, you didn't go to F1 because of Father's Day, and now you'll be like, no,
well,
just
it's
go
a whole
to the,
weekend
why don't
in Montreal.
You take your dad to the Argos game.
I don't think he'd. He might. Anyway.
He would? Spending time with his daughter? Spending time with 27?
Maybe. He was the OG 27. We could just wear 27 jerseys. Anyway,
that would be nice.
But I wouldn't go all the way to Montreal for the weekend just because there's like a whole mess of things going on. But yeah, the Toronto Argonauts kick it off this weekend. So we got.
Yeah, and they had a bye week in week one, so the CFL season already underway. But is it really underway until the Toronto Argonauts?
No, it starts this Sunday.
So
we talked to Enoch
Mwamba. We'll kick off the CFL season then. With Enoch Mwamba.
So a bunch of Canadian legends, and we are golfing with a Canadian legend as well today.
Yeah.
Aaron Ambrose, Olympic gold medalist, is going to come out on the course with us. So dial it in, Justin.
Yeah, I thought we were getting comfortable with our like grouping, and now we've got an Olympian. I'm going to be like, oh, great. I'm going to be a mess again.
Yeah, it's going to be good. She's chill.
She is chill. We saw her at the RBC Canadian Open, and she was just like a normal person. It's like,
She's a friend of mine. She's a normal person.
Yeah. What number is she?
Well, she has had different numbers in terms of her. I played with her when she was 13. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure she's 23 now.
Don't you guys have your numbers retired beside each other
No.
at local rinks in Sutton, Ontario?
Yeah, she was more of a Keswick gal.
Okay.
but she
so a little rivalry there, though.
No, we're good. 23 is her current number, but I played with her when she was 13.
All right, 2-3 anyway. And 2-7 in the cart.
Anywho,
a local golf course.
Lots of fun guests today. Lots to go through. We got some Leafs adjacent news. We've got something on Jason Spezza. Something on, you know, Kyle Dubas, Mike Babcock's family. It's like a weird mixed bag of things on this Baby Friday.
It was a really good SEO day yesterday, I feel like.
That's right.
Like Jason Spezza, Kyle Dubas, Michael Babcock.
If you were blogging, you got the hits yesterday.
Yes, good day to be blogging.
Nico Hines, he's gone. Rico Hines. He's out of the Raptors organization, which is too bad. There's rumors of there's some drama going on in the world. So
yeah, people are scrambling. People are getting jobs and doing other things. The fallout from all the chaos that was the last couple of months.
We've got a Stanley Cup parade planned.
That is true.
Saturday night in the city of Las Vegas on the Strip. And at first I was like, why would you do a parade at 7? And then I remember they're in the desert. It's probably 45 degrees at noon. So it probably makes sense to push it to later. But that is going to be a time and a half. Just those floats going down the street, the whole city shut down. But also, can you shut down Las Vegas? Can you shut down the Strip?
I mean, you got to have some serious clout in order to do that. It's pretty impressive that they're, I mean, I guess they are
a
marquee attraction.
You got to do it at what's another city?
Yeah, you really can't do it anywhere else. There's really just one street. I mean, I guess you could go to Old Vegas, but that would be weird. But yeah, it's just the Strip. Mm-hmm. And there's like a highway and there's surrounding streets, obviously. But the only place you'd want to be, the only place where people could line the streets and actually see what's happening is the Strip. But they're shutting down the Strip. And I've been on the Strip multiple times. It's a bit hazy when I've been there. Okay. It's not like New York City where it's like bumper to bumper. But it is. It's an pretty important area.
Can it hold hundreds of thousands of people?
Oh, yeah.
Then all you need.
Yeah.
But I wonder if you're
cars at home.
If you're a regular tourist of Vegas and you've planned this big weekend coming up, and then all of a sudden there's a massive Stanley Cup parade that's going to be on a Saturday night, but you don't have any idea. You're there for a bachelor, bachelorette. All of a sudden you can't get anywhere. You can't get on the street. You can't walk across to go to this party, this
that
club.
Would be, that would be a problem.
I wonder if that's going to be, I don't think people would be like mad that there's a Stanley Cup parade, but I do think it's going to affect the regular patrons of Vegas that might have plans this weekend that did not account for a Stanley Cup parade Saturday night at 7
p.m. You're definitely not going to have to plan accordingly. Like there would be, if you have to get from one point to the other on the Strip,
you're not going to be able to walk across the street
because you can't take a car, you can't walk.
There's going to be barricades. Like you're going to have to change your whole plan for this weekend.
Stay at your hotel that night, which is fine because there's attractions wherever you are. So you just can't, be too aggressive with where you're going.
We saw the Cup make it out to some clubs.
Yeah.
I said Jack Eichel.
They were kind of low key with what they were like. Clearly Vegas.
I don't know if you saw everything.
You're not that low key, but it feels like I didn't see all that much in terms of like crazy.
Maybe for the best.
I think they did a good job keeping things under wraps a little bit.
Maybe it's like put your phone in the bucket and
yeah.
You get it tomorrow morning.
It might have been that.
But we did see a couple celebrations. Jack Eichel lifting the Stanley Cup in front of some club.
Mm-hmm. They all look the same. I think it was Hagasan. They all look the same.
I don't know. I've never been.
You haven't been to Vegas is crazy to me.
I haven't had a reason. Nobody that I know has had the...
You got to make a
the
reason.
The bachelorette, bachelor
you
extravaganza.
You don't just go for that.
What do I go for? A girls weekend?
Why wouldn't you?
What do you think we lost our Conn Smythe bet. I can't even afford to golf today, Justin. I'm reusing coffee beans because of the Conn Smythe.
If Jack Eichel had won the Conn
Smythe, then I'd be going to Vegas.
We do owe Elliot Friedman an apology.
Yeah, do you want to just quickly discuss?
We might as well.
Okay, so, well, we don't owe Elliot Friedman an apology because we didn't really...
No, we do.
Okay.
We thought we were blaming him. We were blaming him. So, and we actually had the people that we... Not that we shouldn't trust anyone, but all of the big names on the ballot... The people that are like synonymous with breaking news.
Elliot Friedman, Frank Saravelli.
We're trying to get on. Emily Kaplan. All the people that are like front and center when it comes to NHL news breaking. Those people went with Jack Eichel. Where we went wrong.
Was
and those are the
else.
People we're listening to, right? Where we went wrong is everybody else. All like the local writers. Local Vegas people. Jonathan Marchessault. Local Florida people who have some Jonathan Marchessault overlap. Jonathan Marchessault.
13 first place votes for Marchessault.
Yes, he did win comfortably.
And 5 first place votes for Jack Eichel. And the 5 of them We should have.
They're our trusted people, though.
They should have been. We should have given them more respect.
I think their vote should have been worth two. Elliot Friedman should just decide who wins.
I don't think we were still.
Imagine that.
Still
imagine if
close.
It was Elliot's responsibility.
He'd have a lot of pressure on him. Anyway, we 18 voters, and Jack Eichel wasn't that close, which I think actually makes me feel better, because if it was like 13 first place votes to 12, and the score was that close, I think I'd be upset.
Yeah, not only was I convinced that Eichel was going to win, I was convinced afterward that there was some conspiracy.
Yeah, we kind of...
That, like, Jack Eichel was like, oh, no, we should give it to the original misfit. And they actually gave it to the guy who he thought was better deserving of having that stage. Apparently not.
So we apologize, but it wasn't close. And
that means Elliot still has to get us back for dressing up as him for Halloween.
We're all good. Let's leave it in the past.
Okay.
Okay. Blue Jays last night, a much, 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 much needed win against the Baltimore Orioles. They're now 38-31, 3-1 win yesterday night. Wrapping up a 3-game series tonight with 1 o'clock game against the Baltimore Orioles with Kikuchi on the mound. So they can take the series win, which would be huge against a rival. And they're not, as we know, doing quite well in AL East inter-division games.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're 7-16 at this point. So that's pretty bad. But they get a win last night against the Orioles. And there is just really not much to go through beyond Jose Berríos. Like, he is the top story. He is the reason the Blue Jays were in that game for as long as they were. I had no hit bid into the seventh inning. It's been a while since we had like the no watch, like where you're like, oh, well, you don't say it online. Like, we have to go back through like what the etiquette is you just put the eyeball emojis. I think Ben Ennis did that. Everyone's mm-hmm. just like eyeballs. Like, Jose Berríos has a no hitter, right? And it unfortunately it doesn't end up lasting, but still, he was dialed last night. It was really a treat to watch.
We have Ben Shulman on it. We're going to have to ask him about that because
they have to talk about it on the radio.
I was watching. Yeah, they have to say more, definitely. Mm-hmm. But so father and son doing the games on TV and radio, respectively. I didn't know because I'm listening to Dan on television the entire time. I didn't really clue in that it was a no hit bid into mm-hmm. the seventh inning because there was no mention of it.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, I'm paying attention, but I'm also like preparing for
and
today's
also
show.
The score
and I'm going
bug, right? So they don't
and
have
like,
to
oh,
say it as much.
Yeah, he hasn't been dominant. Like, he's not like absolutely mowing everyone down. A lot of contact. I'm sure there was a hit along the way. He had base runners. He did walk, mm-hmm. I think, a pair. So I wasn't really clued into it. And that's because of that unwritten rule where you're not really talking about it. So I wonder if there's like, hey, we've talked about this before, or apple falls from the tree, whatever. Mm-hmm. We'll see if Ben was talking about it openly, because we know that Dan wasn't.
But I think the radio broadcast, like if you're doing the play-by-play or color for the radio last night on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, you have to be a bit more forward with your presentation of what the count is, what the score is, because your listeners aren't seeing the score mm-hmm. bug. Whereas Dan and Buck or Dan and whoever's calling it have the opportunity that Sportsnet broadcast puts it up. Jose Berríos, zero hits, but they don't have to say that. So
right.
you're in a different...
You don't have the visual cues.
You have to say it without saying it.
Yeah,
Ben Shulman, like,
whether it was one walk or two walks, only two walks given up from Jose Berríos through six innings. Starts the seventh without giving up a hit. Something like that. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like you have to say that, mm-hmm. or you are doing a disservice. Interesting.
It is interesting. But Twitter gets so mad if somebody tweets out, like, Jose Berríos heading into the seventh inning without
it's
a
your
hit.
Fault.
It's like, oh, you jinxed them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he played, he pitched it beautifully.
Maybe Ben jinxed Jose Berríos.
We'll have to blame him. Blame Ben. But yeah, no hitter into the seventh. He's now 10-0 against Baltimore. He's just got their number. He's been absolutely the Jose Berríos that we wanted to see last year. The contract is aging just splendidly at this point. He's looking like an absolute weapon in this rotation, and obviously without Alec Manoah, they need everyone to be playing their part. But he just looked the level of confidence that we didn't see last year at times, where the frustration and the poor starts and I guess like the mental toughness was hard to continue to do all season long. And he has just bounced back to full form, and I think Blue Jays fans could not be happier with the way that Jose Berríos has started the season, and yesterday was his best outing.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning, honestly, because we know what happened last season, and you lose all trust that he can be the pitcher that's not even going to just live up to that contract you signed, but actually stay as a major league starter and be someone who you can even rely on for those like fourth, fifth starter spots where it's like, yeah, just give us a chance to win. We know you're going to give up some runs, but just give us a chance to win, keep us in a ball game. And things have turned around so quickly, and he looks like that top of the rotation guy once again. And I think the craziest thing about it is that the season started brutally for him. Gave up 8 earned runs in his debut, followed that up giving up 4 earned runs to the Angels, settled down in his next start, but still only went 5 innings. Like, he started off as he finished his season last year, and it seemed like it was a mental thing that Manoah's dealing with, perhaps. I mean, that's part of it. We still haven't diagnosed that yet, but it felt like it was in Berríos's head, and this was something he may not be able to overcome. And when you start off a season the way it was for the entirety of last year, which was a disaster, you have to worry about their ability to bounce back and to find themselves and to actually pitch the way that they can. And now you look fast forward into the, you know, we've done April, May, and we're into June here. He's got 3 starts in June, a 1.37 ERA in June, 3 starts.
It's his best part of his own career. It's not even his best part of his Blue Jays career. This is the best baseball he's been playing in his entire career. So we're not only just getting the Jose Berríos that we wanted as a Blue Jay, but we're getting a Jose Berríos we have never seen in the MLB.
We went from like hoping, hey, can you get him through, get us 5 innings? Like, can you get us 5 innings here without like absolutely imploding when you go through the order for the third time? To, can he pitch into the ninth tonight? Like, this, it's really, really turned on a dime. And he is someone who relies on contact still. And when you rely on contact, if you're missing your spots, if you are down in terms of velo, like, you can get hit around, but he is still pitching for contact and defending his position unbelievably well. Like, he didn't even need his defense for the first couple innings, it seemed, last night. So he just looks like a confident guy again, a guy who's going up there throwing whatever pitch is right for the scenario. It doesn't matter the handedness, doesn't matter who's up there, what their skills are. He just throws the right pitch for the right scenario because he has confidence in his full arsenal right now, and he's doing it all. He's doing exactly what you expected from him when he signed that big contract. And that contrast against last season, it's one of the more impressive turnarounds that we've seen in the city from an athletic perspective.
And I think you could even put that in league-wide. Like, we talk to our buddy John Morosi every Friday, and I think it's a great discussion point is, you know, there's been some Cy Young winners and some Cy Young candidates that have started the season absolutely crap. Like, he has done the opposite. Like, he has flipped the script so dramatically that I think it's an interesting point to talk about with John tomorrow. But, like, has he been one of the most maybe underrated bounce back seasons? Like, maybe it's because we expect that from him, but look at where he was last year and look at where he is now. Like, it's completely turned on his head. I don't know how much that's getting MLB wide. Like, you know, Kevin Gausman is still, I think, the ace right now for our Blue Jays team. But look what Jose Berríos done in his last 7 starts. Like, look how he's playing the best baseball of his career. We'll bring it up with John tomorrow, but, you know, what other comeback stories are getting love in the MLB? He's got to be one of them.
Yeah, that's a good question. We got to start writing these questions down that we're going to ask people later.
He's always listening, though. He might be a driving
star. Yeah, that's true. He'll just be like,
hey, John, just text
your
John,
question from yesterday. I was listening to you in the 6 a.m. hour. Yeah, he'll be all over it. What I really loved about the start from Berríos last night was, okay, fielding the position, contact early. No strikeouts early on. Like, I think maybe had 1 in the first couple innings there, first 3, 4, 5 innings. But then late in his start, he starts striking out guys. Like, not only are they confused or left off balance early on in the game, and Jose Berríos is doing a great job not allowing any hits clearly until the 7th inning, but he gets deeper into the start, 3rd time through the order, and he starts striking out everyone. And it's like, wow, like that is not only a confident guy, but a guy who is, you know, pitching at an extremely high level right now. It was great to see. I mean, it's so, like, they're desperate for this. They're desperate for the Gausman start to roll around. Now they're desperate for the Berríos start to roll around, because he's been, as in the last 2 months, as much of a constant as this team has had. And this is a team with Kevin Gausman in the rotation.
Yeah, an important opportunity to win this series. Yesterday was their first win against the Orioles all season long. Get a chance today at 1:05 with Kikuchi. Then they're playing the Texas Rangers this weekend and the Miami Marlins to follow up. Like, this is not an easy schedule. So if you can come out with you know, at least it's one series win. You got a big game today with Kikuchi. You might have a bullpen day.
All these American League East games are
of
big.
Of course.
Though. Like, and today's game, excuse me, will really, like, determine whether it's success or failure, obviously. But mm-hmm. if you lose another series in the American League East after today, it's like, wow, like, we lost more ground. You yeah. win this game, positive step in the right direction. Winning a series in the American League East, still a long way to go. But it's today's another important one.
And we saw some lineup changes. So, I mean, obviously the big story that we've been working through is Vladdy, who's not been Vladdy. And John Schneider gave him an opportunity to DH yesterday, moved up to the cleanup spot. And Dalton Varsho elevated to third in lineup. Kirk jumps over Matt Chapman to hit fifth. So a little bit of switcheroo there. Biggio batting last. Playing first base. So they kind of went all over the place yesterday. And for me, the underlying reason is we're trying to get Vladdy in some sort of groove, like trying to find what works for him, trying to get him, whether it's just a rest out on first base so he can focus in a DHing. But I mean, I don't know how much any more times we can keep saying the, like, how do we get Vladdy to be Vladdy? Vladdy needs to be the superstar. I mean, he's still leading the all-star game vote, but we know he isn't playing like an all-star, right? Mm-hmm. So yesterday, John Schneider making some adjustments to try to tweak something. I wouldn't say that it was like a smashing success, you know, but I think it's clearly like tipping the hand at their focus right now is obviously what to do with Vladdy and how to get Vladdy right.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at it a little differently in that, like, okay, this entire lineup is kind of sputtering. Can we change everything in an effort to spark something? Like, it's baseball's version of the blender in hockey, where it's just like, oh, we'll just, you know, mix up every line and pairing because nothing's working and we need a little shot in the arm. It definitely felt like that. But yeah, I mean, at the core of all these issues from an offensive perspective, it is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. who continues to struggle at the plate, who continues to kind of devolve in terms of his approach. I mean, it seems like a guy who's, you know, when you're losing your golf swing, right? You start doing,
gone.
Maybe you're looking at YouTube tutorials, or you're getting advice from people and you're trying to combine all these different ideas. And really you just get further from the point, which is, hey, should we simplify things? That's the way to get back on track. And it seems like someone who's trying to, it looks like someone who's in a slump, who's trying to do too much, who's trying to find something in order to get them out of the problems that they're in. And yeah, I mean, it was not a step in the right direction last night. There was an instance of him like dribbling one out there, not really running it out. And it's like,
see,
okay,
that stuff for me is
like,
so
that's the easy stuff
yeah,
you can
it's
handle.
So easy,
and like, it just compounds the frustration a little bit. Like, I'm not there where I'm like, you know, overreacting, hot take. I don't think we're there yet. I just think he has to hit one out of the park and build. Like, yeah. I think that is the tonic for him. Like, that is the thing that will help him out. And I do think if you just get back to basics and simplicity, you may get there. But I don't think this is a lost cause. I don't think this is like a disaster scenario. I think if he plays his best baseball in the final 3 months of the season, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I do think there are positives here. He's just got to find something. And right now he's searching maybe a little too hard for it.
Yeah, the little things for me, you haven't afforded yourself the opportunity to, you know, jog it out or not make a hustle play or not look like you're taking every single approach to be serious, be a leader by example. If you're in a slump, it's like you got to do the simple things all the time, right? And maybe it's just a lack of attention to detail at times, but yeah, the jogging it out, like that's a kind of like a non-starter for me. Like, you are a young leader, hopefully, on this team, or you want to be. Hustle plays always, right? There's players on this team that give it all every single opportunity they have, and they're not Vladimir Guerrero Jr., right? So I think that I don't know if it's just he's it's laboring and it is weighing on him a lot, but when you're in a slump, I feel like if you just consistently do the little things right, you're going to find a way to get out of that. But it looks like his plate approach is he's trying too much. He's trying to hit the ball out of the park. He's not taking disciplined approaches. And that to me is like, he needs a reset. So if it's moving him into the DH spot, giving him a day off first base, like, I don't know. John Schneider's got a big thing in his hands to figure out and to deal with, because yeah, we would like to see Vladdy. These are some important games coming up. I think you're right about if he hits one home run, like everything changes, but it's like, yeah, I don't know how long we're waiting for one home run And what if it isn't like this click? Now I'm, mm-hmm. oh, I hit one home run. Yeah, I know in hockey sometimes it's like you get a goal, you get the monkey off your back and you, whatever. But if you're doing all the other things right, you hit one home run and then your offense is absolutely back to normal. But if you're not doing all the little things right, is this home run really going to elevate your play all the way to the top? I hope so. But Vladdy,
not if it comes off Luke Raley.
Yeah. Well, it didn't. Yeah, it didn't do for him. Anyway, so yeah, the Vladdy stuff, of course, we'll keep.
Yeah, yeah, keep talking about. Like it's still a team thing, right? Like if the guy, you know, if he strikes out in a big spot and the guy behind him, whether it's Kirk or Chapman, whoever, steps up and lifts him up and has a big hit and picks up his mm-hmm. teammate, like that can go a long way too, where it's just like, nah, I killed my team again. Like I sucked the momentum out of this inning again. That's when it compounds the issue, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's another thing that the Blue Jays have been really searching for, is getting picked up by a teammate, having a clutch moment when it's, you know, when you fail in the opportunity to get a runner home with one out, the guy with two outs does it anyway. Mm-hmm. Like that's the stuff that can kind of like help you get through some individual emotional toll. And I think we saw a couple instances last night of the Blue Jays picking each other up. With Bo Bichette's double after Whit Merrifield's brutal base running blunder, you score the insurance run anyway. And then Jose Berríos gives up a couple runners in the eighth inning, soft contact still, but Meza comes out there, gets the strikeout, or gets the out rather, and you know, the Blue Jays get out of that little jam. So it's still a team aspect. It's not just Vladimir Guerrero being singularly focused on one thing and trying too hard in one area and drowning this team from an offensive perspective. It's not happening that way. But until he really gets right, this team can't function the way it's supposed
And he's going to wear the face of it. Like, you are a young superstar, or you want to be a young superstar in this league. I think you deserve a little bit more of a conversation than if Kevin Kiermaier, who has been very a plus addition, or Whit Merrifield, who another night, like last night, three hit Whit. Like, they're not going to wear the face of this offense not producing, right?
It's going to be Vladdy. Right? Because there's so much more rope to overachieve, right?
Yeah.
If you're one of those guys. Like,
kind of everything you're overachieving.
Yeah, you're like, wow, you're actually hitting that. Like, mm-hmm. that's not to diminish it too much, but like, if you're giving plus contributions, it's like, oh yeah, can we be really happy for that? Because you're not
supposed to be Vladdy.
And you're not supposed to do something otherworldly like Vladdy's supposed mm-hmm. to do. Like, everything, unless you're MVP caliber, is a slight disappointment, mild disappointment. But when it goes too far the other direction and it's like, okay, this is serious disappointment, then that's when it's hard to even get back to the point where you're just a productive baseball player.
Well, the second that Vladdy started this slump and has been in it, I see online all the time in our text line, texters texting in about like, maybe we overestimated what Vladdy is. Maybe this is a Vladdy that played in a ballpark that was Dunedin and was in Buffalo, and we saw these numbers that he'll never get to. Like, I don't think that that's fully accurate. I think that Vladdy can be a superstar in this league, but there is some validity to, look, he hasn't been that guy really since at that exact level, right? So I think people get really, and I'm guilty of it too, like, okay, what is Vladdy? Like, did we put too much on Vladdy's shoulders? And we're at, what, June 15th. There's a lot of baseball to be played left, but that's what I'm saying. So he's going to wear the face of it because he wants to be the guy that is hitting, what, 30 home runs. And look, Bo's had a great season, and George Springer's rounding back into form. So who's next in the to-do list is Vladdy. So,
and there's also the money thing. Like, that's both, like, weighs into the concern conversation and the disappointment and mm-hmm. the anger. Like, that is, it's part of it. But that weighs most on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's the one who hasn't got paid yet. He's the one who hasn't locked up his guaranteed dollars, his $300-plus million, all that stuff. And if we're talking concern level, like, I'm not, like, overly concerned in the first couple months of a Major League Baseball season when that player hasn't been paid yet. Mm-hmm. Because he's still defining himself, as long as he hasn't gotten paid yet, as a player. And if he's not what we expected, then you can readjust and you can change your expectations. You can reroute where you're going as an organization. Not to say you give up on that player, but maybe you're not going to give him that massive contract, make him the face of your franchise for more than a decade. I mean, when you pay the player, and that goes back to the Jose Berríos conversation, when you've paid that player and they paid Jose Berríos mm-hmm. and he can't find it over months and months and spilling into another year, that's when it's terrifying. That's when the concern level is at its peak. But Berríos is proof that you can, even if it goes poorly for a little while, turn things around because he has, and now he's performing at the level that was expected when he signed that contract.
That's why the Manoah stuff, figure it out now. Haven't got paid yet. It helps us as fans kind of work through that. Okay, so Blue Jays, opportunity to win the series today, 1 p.m., Kikuchi versus Tyler Wells. That's on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan, of course. Catch that then, and then you got a nice quiet night after that. So a little daytime viewing experience. Okay, so more things to get through. Jason Spezza, who resigned moments after Kyle Dubas was let go, has now joined the Pittsburgh Penguins. Shocker, shocker, shocker. As an assistant GM, do the Pittsburgh Penguins have a GM to be an assistant to?
No, I don't believe they do, don't, officially.
Which is so what? Interesting. So he'll be reunited with his buddy, Kyle Dubas. I think there's really no surprise to this at all. It kind of felt like a waiting until this was official type thing. I think that it certainly opens the door to who else makes this trip to Pittsburgh. Is it Kyle Dubas now creating his front office with who he wants from Toronto and making it a Pittsburgh-esque version of it? Certainly feels like Jason Spezza headed there will be, once again, a good fit for him. And not surprising for Leafs fans to see that happen.
Yeah, we're sort of doing where is your affiliation lie with the Maple Leafs in this Dubas story? And clearly Jason Spezza, it wasn't with the Maple Leafs per se, it was with Kyle Dubas. And we'll see if there's anyone else who is in that same boat. And we're dancing around the name, so we might as well just say it. Where does this leave Brandon Pridham, who may have been looked at as potentially as the next general manager of the Maple Leafs before Brad Treliving showed up? And nothing really should stand in his way because he is an assistant general manager still with the Maple Leafs. And if you're an assistant, nothing can really block you from another team making you their general manager. And the way it is set up in Pittsburgh is that Dubas is the Shanahan, and they're still looking for their Dubas because they just put the Spezza under their Dubas. So there's a vacancy right there. It would seem if Pittsburgh wanted Pridham and Pridham wanted to go,
I think it would be so easy to make that happen.
So we'll see if Brandon Pridham actually has a decision to make here. But as long as that general manager vacancy is open, which is redundant, as long as the vacancy is there, we're probably going to be talking about Brandon Pridham because we know, like, Spezza is like this with Kyle Dubas. Pridham was the same.
If you're already plugging in the assistant role of a GM spot that doesn't currently have someone in the chair, doesn't it seem easy to say, well, this guy's going to work well with unnamed person because we know who unnamed person is? If it's Brandon Pridham, then we know that Jason Spezza and Kyle Dubas will be a nice little trio. So I think
a GM should choose its assistants.
I think that there's something there because if they pick, I don't know, Justin Cuthbert to be the GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins, you don't know how you're going to work with Jason Spezza. Jason Spezza seems like an incredible person. I don't think there's any problem there, but wouldn't you want some sort of either relationship prior or a decision-making thing that you chose who's going to be your assistant?
100%.
So it's like you don't hire the assistant coaches before you hire the head coach, right?
There could be some like holdovers,
but you don't hire someone from another organization.
That would be strange, yes.
To come over and be the assistant coach of Toronto Maple Leafs when you don't have a head coach.
100%.
So it's a weird decision-making process, but obviously it has to do with the relationship between Dubas and Spezza. And for me, it feels even more likely that there might be somebody else going, but I mean, I hope that's not the case. Seems like Brandon Pridham is like a highly coveted asset, and he's done so much in terms of the way he's aligned this cap situation. He's smart. Everyone says he's one of the smartest men in hockey. Be tough to see him walk because of that opportunity to continue to be with people that obviously value him very highly. So we'll see what Brad Treliving does.
And yet, if Treliving and Pridham are oil and water for whatever reason, I don't expect them to be. Mm-hmm. I think they have that relationship. Treliving was talking about it. Like, maybe it's not best. But again,
it has been a little quiet, though, right? As soon as Brad Treliving came in.
Well, it's supposed to be feverish activity. And now we're 13 days away, I think, from the draft.
Mm-hmm. And still no real confirmation on Keefe. Still not a full idea of the front office structure. It's going to be the end of this week tomorrow. Then you have, what, another full week? And do you just go into the draft the way you are going into the draft, right? So I wonder if we'll see anything next week. Feverish was the word, and it has been more quiet than anything.
Interesting on Spezza because he, like Dubas, sort of, nah, I wouldn't say made prop, maybe did, but it, like, he made it so that, like, Toronto is my home, right?
Yeah, didn't he say he would,
I'm
like,
making a family here. My daughters are going to be here. Yeah. I'm taking league men because I want to be
play anywhere
here.
Else.
Won't play anywhere else, right? He did say won't play anywhere else.
Pretty sure. Because
he didn't say won't manage anywhere else. But is he just going to be a Pittsburgh person now? Be a Pittsburgh guy?
I loyalty wonder how means the setup a lot. Is. Like,
loyalty does mean a lot. But, like, again, maybe this is kind of a Shane Doan thing where it's like, yeah, I'll be on the ranch and I'll be in Toronto, but I'll be in Pittsburgh when I need to be in Pittsburgh.
Well,
it's just nice to have one of those gigs.
Win for him. Okay, you've got a Babcock tidbit here.
No, I mean, it's definitely a news item. Mm-hmm. Michael Babcock's son, who I didn't even know there was a second, actually a third. This is the third Mike Babcock, but he goes by Michael. There's another Babcock, another Mike Babcock in the league, hired by the St. Louis Blues as a skills coach. Apparently, he has like zero coaching experience, like very little. He was on the Saskatchewan University staff with his dad at some point after like a very brief pro career that was played, I think, entirely overseas. But just the news of another Mike Babcock being in the NHL yesterday.
He looks just like him. Have you seen the photo of him?
Like, he looks like a young Mike Babcock.
He's 28 years old, and
it's actually terrifying.
Like a 28-year-old Mike Babcock.
So not only is one Mike Babcock, the Mike Babcock, back in the league coaching the
Michael
Columbus Blue
Babcock
Jackets.
The third is
we
his
got
name.
A Michael Babcock the third to deal with now.
So he's going to be the Blues skills coach.
Mm-hmm.
And he was with the Ottawa Senators last year, where he specialized in-game plans, pre-scouting, and on-ice development. So, I mean, big spot.
So a little coaching experience.
A little bit, yeah. I mean,
hanging around the Senators.
We just didn't know
year.
That he existed. So no. It's just funny that there's now a Michael Babcock III and Mike Babcock. Wait till they play each other.
Mm.
They just look eerily similar. It's he played a Merrimack.
Babcocks are respawning.
It's the year of the Babcock.
Babcock's back.
Okay, one other thing here that I wanted to bring up. So Stanley Cup takeaways are happening. Some stats. This one's kind of sad. Stanley Cup Finals national broadcast ratings were down 43%. I believe this is an American stat from last year. It was the least viewed Stanley Cup final since 2007.
Now, it was on ESPN last year and mm-hmm. TNT this year. I'm not like an expert on like where you get your television or what's available to you, but I feel like ESPN would be more readily available than TNT.
I can't tell you if
that's not much of an excuse, but I know like if you're anywhere in the United States, ESPN, there's a television with ESPN.
Yep.
Like you just, and I don't know how much that juices the numbers, but I feel like it would have somewhat of an impact because it's just like the default station everywhere you go. But that's not great. That is not great. I think it speaks to the markets that were involved. I mean, as much as you want to talk about how Matthew Tkachuk is the face of hockey, he's not. And the Florida Panthers are not a team that is a particularly high draw. Vegas is as strong of a franchise in terms of like not major market, like not a New York, LA, whatever. As you could possibly want, but it is still a local market, mm-hmm. and a lot of those people are going to the games, and a lot of people are involved in different ways other than sitting at home and watching them. So I think there are reasons why it would draw lower, but it's still not great. 43 is a big, big number, and it's hard to reconcile with that number, but they've signed these major deals with ESPN and TNT, and they're locked into them. So all that they can really hope for, well, we hope a Canadian team goes because it does matter, right? That, you know, there's some major market involvement in the upcoming seasons, because I do think we would see a change in the numbers based on who's playing.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm too surprised that the viewing experience was down, but on the other side of it, 2023 NBA playoffs were the league's most watched in 5 years. And I think that's surprising too, because you kind of had a similar...
On ESPN?
Yeah, you had the postseason average 5.4 million viewers across ESPN, ABC, and TNT. So I think they combined them all.
Okay.
Nonetheless, I think, you know, you also had the Miami Heat, who were an 8 seed, doing something pretty remarkable. You had the Denver Nuggets, who are a first-time championship team. Yeah. And so, like, I thought maybe there'd be a similarity in terms of, like, lower viewing experience, but seemed like the NBA playoffs took off, maybe at the expense of the NHL playoffs.
Yeah, maybe happening simultaneous, because it normally is not like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether the NHL is before or after, based on how the pandemic shifted timelines, usually the NBA Finals is awarded after, right? usually it's a bit it's staggered, but when they're running simultaneously and it's every other night, a lot of people are not into watching sports every single night mm-hmm. on the couch. So if you're choosing one, if you're an American or a general sports fan, maybe you're leaning basketball.
So this tidbit of that's the entire NBA series wrapped up, sorry, of the whole playoffs, but the final itself, this is where it gets interesting, was the least watched.
Oh, okay.
So the final between Denver and Miami okay. was the least watched outside of the series affected by COVID since 2007. So watching the actual final, the final between Denver and Miami, least watched since 2007, but in terms of the entire NBA playoffs, one of the most watched. So people really did not want to watch Denver or Miami in the final.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's just strange. I think it was a very unique year for championship winners. We saw two back-to-back winners that had never won a championship before, and then two teams also in the final that really didn't have much business, I guess, statistically or standings-wise, being there.
So people still don't know how good Nikola Jokic is.
Did you see that there's a clip surfacing that he was talking to Malika Andrews about it, right? Mm-hmm. And she's asking you didn't come in with the trophies. It's like post the next day, maybe media. He's like, I don't know where my MVP trophy went. Like I left it in the locker room or in the trainer's room and it's gone.
Does it bother you at all how little he cares?
No, I think it's just authentically him.
Yeah.
You know what bothered me when I saw Jimmy Butler saying, I would never go to the Hall of Fame. I don't want to be a Hall of Famer. I wouldn't go. I don't care about being a Hall of Famer. It's like, don't lie, Jimmy Butler. Like if somebody said, would you like to be in the Hall of Fame? We'd like to induct you. You would go. Jokic, I feel like he's just so authentically like himself that it doesn't bother me that he doesn't really care about this stuff. Like he seems so genuine about it. He wants to go home to his horse ranch and live mm-hmm. his life, right?
It only bothers me in like the most selfish way where it's like, how is it fair that you care so little and that you are so great at something? Like to be that good at something if you haven't, and he has put, let's be honest, the 10,000 hours 10 times over, mm-hmm. 100%. But it doesn't burn like it does with others. And yet it doesn't matter because he's that good.
Yeah. I think he's earned the right to...
He's overplaying a little bit the I don't care. Like, I'm sure he does care.
I'm sure there's like a 10%.
But if he lost that trophy, goofiness. I don't think he cares.
No.
So someone on that team better just like put it in a safety box.
I'm sure they'll find it.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll find it. Okay, let's take a break. We've got the A-list on the other side, and then we'll hear from Dave Markle, who's the caddy for Nick Taylor in the PGA Tour from LA as the U.S. Open tees off this morning around 9 a.m. The first groups are out. The Canadians are a little later in the day. So you get a nice primetime viewing later in the day to watch golf on your couch. We got a full day of guests ahead, but we'll do the A-list after the break.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now, it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right. Tis the season for graduation. We have a lovely text in the text line that Steve from Oshawa is taking his daughter for her grade 12 graduation gift to F1 this weekend in Miami. In Montreal. Miami would be nice. I'm sure she'd like to go there, too. In Montreal.
So, less traffic in Miami, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I have no way. Miami's busy.
Maybe better logistically.
Yes, I think so. So there's lots of graduation going on around, and congratulations to the grads, including Kyle Dubas, who just received an honorary doctorate from his alma mater, Brock University, which we know and love. In 2007, he graduated with a degree in sport management and was asked to come back and speak to the young, the youth,
mm-hmm.
the future of
which is nice.
Sport
like, yeah,
management.
Kyle Dubas showed up at my graduation, mm-hmm. I'd be like, hell yeah, like this is someone I want to listen to.
He was honored with a honorary doctorate, so he is now Dr. Dubas.
Is he, though?
He's got an honorary doctorate, Dr. Dubs.
Like, there's no way we call you doctor now.
No, you're not Haley Wickenizer.
I love
who
Dave.
Who is a doctor.
Yes, it diminishes actual doctors. But I love David Alter. I saw the tweet Dr. Kyle Dubas yesterday, and I just burst out laughing.
Okay, well, we have a clip from Dr.
Okay,
Kyle Dubas about his time. So he's on the podium talking to the next generation, and he does refer to his time with the Maple Leafs.
When Dr. Rigg called me in March, offered me the chance to come back here today and receive this honor, it was very overwhelming and frankly made me incredibly nervous. because oftentimes when people are invited to give addresses like this, they have far more life experience and far more wisdom, far more success that they can impart onto the graduates and their families. So though I felt honored, I felt a great deal of imposter syndrome as well. On May 19th, I was fired from my job with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And it was at that point, after thinking for a couple of months after Dr. Igg had called, exactly what I wanted to say. I'd never been fired before. That was my first time. Hopefully my last, but I'll probably get that same conversation again at some point. That's life and the way that it goes. As Dr. Igg just said, embrace failure. We've had a lot of failure in my time with the Leafs and Sault Ste. Marie, and I'm happy to share that with you at all times. That's the way it goes.
Very giggly in that audience. Everyone's like, do we laugh at that?
The Maple Leafs? They were laughing pretty hard.
It was cute. But yeah, he got up there, he got his honorary doctorate degree, and back to Pitt he goes.
It really confused me yesterday what a doctor it was. Like, I went to post-secondary. I have a post-secondary education, but I'm not like going back every year and celebrating everyone who does post.
It's a pretty big American school thing. Like,
that's what I mean. I was like, I don't remember any of that.
Like, we certainly at my graduation and any other commencement from Dartmouth, whoever's your like speaker, convocation, whatever speaker, mm-hmm. commencement speaker, gets an honorary degree for their like lifetime achievement in that role. It's a way of honoring somebody. Usually they have the alma mater tie.
It's a glorified guest speaker.
It 100% is.
You're booking someone.
It's like, come
to
here
headline,
and do this thing. And
you're
we're
headlining
gonna,
a graduation.
We'll give you something for your wall. Okay. We could plaque
so
this thing.
So he's not a medical doctor.
I really hope he doesn't try to practice.
He doesn't
being
get the prefix. If he gets the prefix, he can't get the prefix.
He could use it.
No. There's no.
Somebody listening's got to have an honorary doctorate.
If anyone earnestly calls him Dr. Kyle Dubas, I'm not going to be able to handle it.
Well, he's got an honorary doctorate. He's got it on his wall, probably in Pittsburgh.
If I'm a doctor grinding 12 hours a day,
it's probably
and he's using doctor, I'm furious.
It's probably a little bit of... you go to school for an extra 10 years.
Guy runs a hockey team that does nothing.
Yeah, he made that clear,
he's got
too.
The same title that I have as someone who cures people of serious disease.
A little different, but yes, the DR, what is that, prefix still applies. Mm. Anyway, congrats to Kyle Dubas and all the grads that are graduating in this time. You did it. Way your hats fly as high as your dreams. Mm-hmm.
It's a great moment, throwing the hat.
Let's do it. Dave Markle joins us after the break. Caddy for Nick Taylor on the PGA Tour. Let's talk about that Canadian heritage moment that we witnessed on Sunday.